Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Emhauser. You can find me and all the things that we do on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts at Hawk Blogger. And today, December 22nd, it is holiday week, Christmas week for some. And I wish everyone a Merry Christmas who celebrates. And hopefully you guys have some fun plans in store. If you are a parent like me, you probably also have kids at home. So there is a chance I will get interrupted during the show today and have to go help my son with whatever mayhem he's getting into in the other room. But I'm hoping not. I'm hoping we get to hang out because I have definitely spent too much time by most measures, but not by mine, really just savoring that Seahawks win, diving into a lot of different angles of where things stand with this team. I found some interesting trends that I want to share with you, some interesting things that may be obstacles for Mike McDonald and for the Seahawks to reach the goals that they want to reach, some more obvious than others. And I don't have the answers for all of it, but I've found some things I'm curious about. And so I'll share some of that along the way. I will also, I'm going to start by kind of going through the weekend slate and the results that we saw from some of these games, any implications to the Seahawks. There's also some news about the Seahawks that I am annoyed about, and I will share that with you just a moment from now. If you haven't already given the show a like and click subscribe, please do. I would greatly appreciate that. And 5-star review over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. Super, super helpful. This is the latest one I've got here. This comes from Elijah Hansen. It says, as someone who lives in Wisconsin and not having any Hawks fans around me, listening to this podcast is my favorite part of the day. It gives a great sense of community. Well, Elijah, welcome to the crew, and so happy to do that because honestly, that's a big part of why I started this in the first place. Gives me a little purpose and hopefully gives others some community to hang out. So let's start with talking about the news. Derek Hall was suspended for one game for stepping on Rams guard Kevin Dotson, and he appealed that suspension yesterday. The ruling came down this morning that his suspension was upheld. So despite the fact that there is very clear video evidence that his foot was caught underneath the player, causing his other foot to come down and that he clearly tripped, they upheld the suspension, which I think is absolute lunacy. I've gotten to know Derek this year and last year. There's just zero chance that this guy intentionally tried to step on a player lying on the ground to hurt him. Like, there's just no way. And the fact that the appeal was not result in a reversal of the suspension to me is really, really frustrating. Like, that's not who he is. And I think there's pretty clear evidence that that's not what he did. In any event, that's the ruling. That means Derek Hall will be out this week. That also means that the Seahawks will play the Carolina Panthers in Carolina down one of their starting edge players. And despite the fact that Derek Hall has not had a ton of what you consider, you know, counting stats this year in terms of sacks and things of that in that regard, he has been one of their best edge players. And if you look at who leads the Seahawks in pressures on the edge, it is DeMarcus Lawrence with 44 pressures. Uchenna Nwosu has 41. And then it's Derek Hall with 37. I think what this will likely mean is that the three edge players, DeMarcus Lawrence, Uchenna Nwosu, Boye Mafe, that still are with the team, will play extra snaps this weekend. It could also mean that Connor O'Toole, who has been active lately, undrafted free agent, edge rusher, has been with the team all season, could get some snaps. So that's a possibility as well. But in general, you know, anyone that's asking about Jared Ivey, if that's on your mind, Jared Ivey could be in the mix as well. Generally, Jared Ivey is more of a DeMarcus Lawrence clone in terms of kind of a big edge. And I see Connor O'Toole is more of a similar profile to Derek Hall. But either one of those guys could potentially play. Jared Ivey, super strong. You know, I thought we had a really, really nice training camp in preseason, has not been getting the call as much when they've needed edge help. It's been Connor O'Toole. So that would be my guess of how that gets handled. I don't believe that that's, you know, going to be the difference between a win and a loss on Sunday against the Panthers, but it is a meaningful loss. Derek Hall's a very good player for the Seahawks. As far as run defense, which is going to be a big deal this weekend, Derek Hall ranks fourth on the Seahawks in terms of run defense grade. So he has a 75.8 grade. DeMarcus Lawrence has a 77.8. So they're pretty much two peas in a pod. To get to the next edge in terms of run defense grade, you are dropping down quite a ways. I mean, Chenna Nwosu, 64.5. Boye Mafe, 62. So Connor O'Toole, in his few snaps, had a 64.5 run defense grade. He's known more as a pass rusher. So that might be more where you would miss him. And I'm just double checking one other thing here. Yeah. All right. That's good. So that's the Derek Hall news. Let's talk about what happened this weekend and implications for the Seahawks. So first of all, how fun is it to be able to watch football for a whole weekend and have a win in the bag against your biggest competition and a historic classic win at that? Certainly enjoyed the glow of that this weekend. But first, Saturday slate of games. I talked about this with Rob Staten a little bit yesterday, but the Eagles played the Commanders on Saturday. They won 29-18, and that was a game that was close most of the way. In fact, the Commanders led at halftime 10-7. And this was a game where, you know, Jalen Hurts operated more under center than he has most of the year. So they're trying some things there. He finished 22 of 30 for 185 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. So a good, efficient game, not necessarily a lot of volume in terms of the passing, 6.2 yards per throw. Saquon Barkley did rush for 132 yards. That's a big thing for them. I think that's Saquon Barkley has now had 120 yards plus in two of their last three games after having a stretch where he was having trouble breaking, you know, 80 yards. So they are getting a little bit there, but again, competition matters. They were playing the Commanders, and we all know the Commanders are not exactly the stoutest defense. The last time he had the big 100-yard rushing game was against the Chargers, who are a pretty damn good rushing defense. So that was that. A.J. Brown had, you know, I think more one of his highest production games, 9 catches, 95 yards. I think that's important for that team. But also important for that team is pass rush, and they just don't have it. They had two sacks in that game. Brandon Graham had one of them, and Byron Young, not that Byron Young, but a different Byron Young, had the other. I think it's a team that's struggling on that side against a Commanders team that is not that good. And by the way, the Commanders not only didn't have Jaden Daniels, but then Marcus Mariota went out injured. So Josh Johnson had to finish that game. And that's when the Eagles pulled away. So I still, the Eagles are the Super Bowl champs. Until someone knocks them off, they're going to be tough. But like, generally, I'm not sure they're trending in a direction where they are, you know, your biggest concern. The other Saturday game, this was big. Obviously, the Packers, Bears. The Bears win this game in shocking fashion, recovering an onside kick, getting a a deep pass from Caleb Williams that DJ Moore caught, absolute beautiful throw, beautiful catch to win that game. Really fun game to watch in terms of the wind and watching. I thought it was, I've never had more fun watching kickers kicking field goals. They would kick it, you know, to the opposite side, and it would just, the wind would just carry it back into the middle of the goalpost. I was really impressed with the kickers in that game. But this is a big deal, and I think it leaves the Bears with a still very real chance of the number one overall seed if they win out. Their remaining schedule is the 49ers in San Francisco on what will be a Sunday night game this coming weekend. And then they play the Lions at home. And we'll talk about the Lions in a second, but that's not looking to be quite as tough of a game as it had been a few weeks ago. If they can get the win in the 49ers, then they'll be, you know, hoping that the 49ers can beat the Seahawks, and then they'll be in good shape for that number one seed. But this is a big game for the Bears. And it's a typical thing where the Bears, you don't know what to make of them, but Caleb Williams through three quarters is doing nothing, like every time. And then fourth quarter comes around, he winds up with a really nice looking game, 19 of 34, 250 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, no sacks, you know, an 81 QBR, also rushed for 30 yards, kept a number of plays alive. So, you know, this is, I thought, one of Caleb Williams' better games overall. And their running game is their bread and butter, 150 yards on the ground. You know, again, this team just really has a great offensive line and likes to lean on people. So they did this without Roma Dunze, without, I think they're missing another receiver. I'm spacing on his name, but they're without a couple of key receivers and still managed to, you know, beat the Packers. Now, the Packers lost Jordan Love to a concussion, and I thought the concussion looked pretty bad. I mean, he was out right away. We'll see what his prognosis is for his next game. They are going to be home against the Ravens on, I think that's a Saturday game. It is a Saturday game, an evening game. And then they're at the Vikings. So the Packers are, I mean, if they lose to the Ravens, you know, they'll be 9-6. They're teetering. So this is a team that they really blew this game. Some turnovers inside the 5-yard line in the red zone. Obviously, the onside kick. Just not a lot of good stuff there. And they had zero sacks in this game. They had four quarterback hits. By the way, the Bears, not a great defense either. They had two sacks in this game, five quarterback hits. So keep that in mind in terms of, it's not just, everyone focuses on the offenses of these teams. I think it's really important to see the defenses. Continuing through. Other games that mattered. I mean, the Bills barely beat the Browns, 23-20. Bills are just a hard team to figure out. The Cowboys are out of the playoffs, if you didn't already know that. The Titans blew away the Chiefs. That was without Patrick Mahomes. And then Gardner Minshew tore his ACL, it looks like. So he also was out. So, you know, congrats to the Titans on getting the win, but, you know, the Chiefs are really, really cooked. Then we get to a game that might not seem like it has much to do with anything, but the Bengals walloped the Dolphins. Why would we spend any time on this game? Well, the Dolphins play the Tampa Bay Bucks next week, and I'll explain why that matters in a second. But the Dolphins started Quinn Ewers at quarterback. They benched Tua Tagovailoa, and Quinn Ewers went 20 of 30 for 260 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. He did average 8.7 yards per throw. Had a number of explosive passes, 21 yards to Jalen Waddle, 29 to Greg Dulcich, 22 to Darren Waller, 23 to Malik Washington. So he was pushing the ball down the field, which is a good sign for them. They did run the ball relatively well, 129 yards, but that defense could not slow down the Bengals. The Bengals won. This was in Miami, by the way. So they win 45-21. And you've got Jamar Chase going off. You've got T. Higgins going off. And we'll see. The reason this matters is because, let me get to the game that matters the most for Seahawks fans. The Carolina Panthers played the Tampa Bay Bucks, and this was a fun one. I thought close game throughout, back and forth. Neither team really opened it up that much in terms of the passing game. The Panthers did a little bit more in that regard, but generally this is a game kind of decided on the ground and through, just ended up with a, you know, defensive stand at the end. But the Panthers beat the Bucks, and what that meant, or what that means, is that the Panthers can clinch the playoffs and the division by beating the Seahawks and by having the Dolphins beat the Bucks. Now, I think it is very unlikely. This will be at Miami. Not that it's that much of a road trip from Tampa Bay to Miami, but these games, the Tampa Bay game against Miami and the Seahawks game against Carolina, will be happening at the same time, 10 a.m. Pacific. So there is a chance that the Bucks are beating the Dolphins badly on Sunday, and that the Panthers know that no matter what they do against the Seahawks, they will have to beat the Bucks in the last game of the regular season in Tampa Bay to make the playoffs, essentially making the game that they're playing against the Seahawks meaningless. There's also a chance that they could see that the Dolphins are surprising and that they are beating the Bucks. And if that's the case, they're going to get all sorts of motivation to know that if they beat the Seahawks, they've clinched the division at home, in front of their home crowd. So it does bring this game into, you know, stark relief for that team. If you thought there was a chance that the Seahawks were going to walk in there and the Panthers were for some reason not going to be highly motivated, that's not going to happen. And, you know, we'll talk more about this Panthers team throughout the week and get you familiarized with what they do well and what their weaknesses are. This is a team that's 5-2 at home. They are a better team at home. They have been all season, and that's where the Seahawks will be facing them. That's where they beat the Rams. The weather as of now, I think, is supposed to be pretty warm, like almost 70 last time I looked. So I don't think weather will play a major role. But this was a game where, if you watched it, Bryce Young was probably the most impressive part of the team for the Panthers. And he's had a very up and down year. He ended up with, his numbers aren't that impressive. 21 of 32, 191 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, two sacks, had a 102.5 passer rating. He also had four carries for 20 yards. What was impressive was his ability to create. So when he was under pressure, his ability to avoid the rush, keep his eyes downfield, and still deliver to receivers. One of his touchdown passes came like that, where he was scrambling over to his left. One of the defenders released to kind of pick him up on the scramble. It opened up the receiver, and he just tossed it into the end zone for a wide open touchdown. I thought he looked in command. I thought he was making good decisions. And the Seahawks have at times struggled with quarterbacks that are mobile in the pocket. So, you know, that was the story of the game from my perspective. The Bucks came in there really determined to run the ball down the Panthers' throats, and they did that for the most part. They had 170 yards rushing, averaged over 5 yards a carry. Some of that was Baker Mayfield scrambling, by the way. He had four carries for 49 yards. But Bucky Irving had 71 yards. Rashad White had 45 yards. So it was not just quarterback scrambles. The Bucks did not pass the ball much, only 145 yards passing for Baker Mayfield. One touchdown. He had one pick. This ended the game. Mike Evans made a decision to cut inside on a choice route. Baker Mayfield thought he was going to cut outside, And he threw it to the outside, went right to a Panthers defender who picked it off to end the game. So that's a big one. Again, the Panthers defense, not a lot of teeth there. They did have a couple of sacks. They sent a decent amount of blitzes trying to get at Baker Mayfield. J.C. Horn obviously is a great corner. He had some moments. But I think he also left with a bit of a hand or wrist injury in that game. So we'll keep an eye on that as things progress throughout the week. So that was kind of the game that I spent the most time paying attention to this week or this weekend. From there, other games that had any meaning, I mean, I'll just mention it. The Jaguars-Broncos game, I thought the Jaguars looked fantastic in this game. Parker Washington, who was a draft favorite of mine out of Penn State, has had a fantastic game in this one. And they really, I think they kind of blew out the Broncos in their home field. It was very impressive. There were some big hits, some guys. I think Pat Bryant was hospitalized for the Broncos on one of the last plays of the game. He's okay. He's been released, concussion, but nothing else serious. Trevor Lawrence took some big hits in this one. Bo Nix kind of, you know, he kind of shit the bed, to be honest. You know, one touchdown, one interception. He had a bunch of yards, 352 yards, but did not have a great game. And this was a pretty big one. It opens up the chance that the Broncos, you know, they've, as far as who gets the number one overall seed, could be the Broncos, Jaguars, Patriots. So AFC wise, that's still wide open. But that win over the Jags is looking a little bit more impressive by the week. A little bit of a different Jags team now than they were then. But still, the Seahawks controlled that game pretty much throughout. Other games that matter. Falcons played the Cardinals. They did win. It was kind of a fun game, to be honest. I Bijan Robinson is just always fun to watch. And he had some unbelievable cuts in this game. They beat the Cardinals 26-19. The reason this matters, couple folds. One, the Falcons, the Rams own the Falcons' first round pick this coming draft. So the Falcons losing moved them down in the draft order. That's a good thing, right? The other thing is that the Falcons play the Rams next week. Now, I don't think any of us believe that the Falcons are going to beat the Rams. They are hosting the Rams, for what it's worth. It will be in Atlanta. And it's going to be on Monday night football. But I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something there. The Rams defense, for as good as it has been, has lagged a little bit of late. And if you look at, I'll pull this up for you. If you look at the Rams last four games, they played the Panthers. They gave up 31 points. They only gave up 17 to the Cardinals, and that was a joke, but they did give up 314 yards to them. They gave up 34 points to the Lions. They gave up 38 points, 30 in regulation, but 38 points to the Seahawks. So they've given up 30 points or more in three of their last four games. That's some reason for hope against the Falcons. Also the Falcons still do have a pretty decent pass rush that could show up a little bit. Let's look real quick. I'm curious what the odds are for Falcons Rams. Pull this open real quick. Rams are 8 to 8.5 point favorites. That's about right. But we'll see. Who knows? Miracles can happen. And then the Cardinals also lose. So they're 3-12. Unbelievable. Cardinals started the season 2-0. 2-0. Just the quick math there. They've gone 1-12 since then. Yikes. So they're going to get a high pick in a really bad draft. Maybe they pick a quarterback in a bad quarterback draft and the Cardinals nightmare just rolls on. I think that's mostly it. I kind of watched the Patriots Ravens game for weird reasons. I wanted to make sure that the Patriots gave up enough points to the Ravens that the Seahawks were still number two in points allowed, which they are. But that's really it for the weekend slate in terms of what happened there. The other kind of Seahawks-y news, DK Metcalf, if you missed it, he, during the Lions game, really wild finish there. I'm not going to go through it because it just doesn't matter. There's other stuff I want to cover, but DK Metcalf got into it with a Lions fan who was leaning over the banister or whatever you call it, the railing, and DK Metcalf grabbed the fan and then looked like he took a swing at the fan. And the fan saying he just called him by his full name, DK Metcalf threw, I think, Chad Ochocinco or whatever on his pod, saying that the guy used a slur and talked about his mom. Whatever the case is, not a good look for DK Metcalf. Fans can be awful. So I don't feel like fans deserve like a free ride here, but the reality is, the player just can never engage. The player just has to walk away. Nothing good comes of them. Like, it could be the most justified thing in the world. You put hands on a fan, it's not going to go well for you. So I'd assume some pretty significant repercussions for DK Metcalf. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a multiple game suspension, to be honest. But we'll find out. We'll find out. And it's a little bit of a he said, she said, because I doubt anyone's got audio of what was said. All right. So that kind of takes you through the weekend slate. What does this where does this leave the Seahawks? Well, it leaves the Seahawks as the team with the most wins in the NFL, tied for the most, but still, they have as many wins as any other team in the NFL with 12. The only other teams that have 12 are the Broncos and the Patriots. The Seahawks have the top point differential in the NFL, 164. Only the Rams are close at plus 158. That makes the Patriots are down at plus 110. So a pretty decent distance away. The Seahawks are also number one in DVOA again, just barely ahead of the Rams. And I'll talk about some trends going on there, but Seahawks, not just number one in DVOA, they are one of the best DVOA teams in history. The only teams through 16 weeks that have had a higher DVOA rating than the Seahawks, the 2007 Patriots, who went undefeated, went to the Super Bowl, lost. The 1991 Redskins, who won the Super Bowl, the 1985 Bears, who won the Super Bowl, and the 2023 Ravens, Mike McDonald's Ravens, who lost in the AFC Championship. Those are the only teams to be ahead of the Seahawks in DVOA through 16 weeks. We got to start talking, like, we're going to talk about the obstacles. We're going to talk about what's in the way. But it's enough already about whether this team is a true Super Bowl contender. We've been through 16 weeks. Not only do the Seahawks have as many wins as any other team, the highest point differential, highest DVOA. It's also one of the highest DVOAs in the history of the sport through 16 weeks. And oh, by the way, oh, they haven't beaten anyone good. Or maybe the Rams game was the only big win. Well, as far as the point differential goes, the Seahawks are 4-1 against the top seven teams in point differential. Who are the teams that I'm talking about? Well, it's the Jags, it's the Rams, it's the Texans, it's the Colts. Now, the Colts one you can dismiss, but it is real. That's the case. So of the teams that have the best point differentials in the NFL, the Seahawks are 4-1 against those teams. So I think we're running out of reasons to say the Seahawks aren't the best team in the NFL. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to win the whole thing. It doesn't even mean that they're going to win their next two games. But they certainly are deserving of that kind of conversation. And I think that's how we should be treating it. Certainly how I've been treating it for a little while now. Now, I've been doing all sorts of crazy things. The show is going to kind of go in a lot of directions from here. So I'll try to have some visuals to help. This is not perfectly sewn together. This is kind of like an old school Hawk Blogger Mornings where I would just walk through some data. We'll talk through it together, figure out what we think about it as we go. I've been doing a bunch of work on creating some reports based off of what's called NFL Fast R. If you don't know what that is, thanks to Ben Baldwin for creating it, making it available. It's an open source database of every NFL play since 1999. I spent the weekend downloading it, putting it on a server where I can run queries against it, and starting to generate some reports that I'm going to do on a regular basis for myself and, you know, for us and any other folks that are interested. And I'll share some of the things that I found there. I'll also share some of the reports, partly because I'm proud of it, but partly because it's cool and there's some things of interest there. But as I was going through some numbers on the Seahawks, a few things stood out to me. And again, these are all over the place, but I'll start with some good things and then I'll talk about some challenges. So good things. The Seahawks, when you talk about DVOA, and we go through their rankings all the time, right? Well, generally, it's like the Seahawks are first overall and they're top 10 in offense and first in defense and second in special teams. All that's kind of been stable for a while. Offense has been sliding a little bit. Defense, special teams, overall ranking have been stable. But then you get to passing offense. That's been sliding a little bit. It had been first for a long time. It's down to fourth now. Rushing offense, though. Rushing offense had been pretty low. And in fact, I want to bring open, there it is. There it is. Team by trends. Okay. So the Seahawks weeks, let's get to rush weeks weeks one through nine, the Seahawks were, that's not right. The Seahawks were one of the worst rushing teams in the league. They were 24th in DVOA in rushing offense through week nine. And there's times that they were lower, like 26th, 27th, things like that. They, since week 10, which is something we've talked about on this show, week 10 was when their rushing game started to turn around. They now rank 12th in rushing offense on DVOA since week 10. And overall, for the whole season, they rank 18th. Now, 18th doesn't sound great, but that's getting close to middle of the pack. 16th is dead center. And they're getting pretty close to being a top 10 rushing offense from a DVOA perspective over that time. One of the things that's really cool about that is, I got to put this in another view so that you guys can see it. One second. Forgive me for taking an extra second here. All right. So here's one of the reports I put together. This is going to be a little bit of an eye chart, but I'll try to zoom in for you. Okay. So here is a look at, let's just look at the offense for a second. We're going to zoom in and we're going to look at EPA and success rate trends, and we'll look at the green lines. Okay. Look at the green lines here. And what do you see? For the beginning of the season, rush efficiency was always below zero, you know, and generally rushing efficiency is going to be a negative number because rushing is not a super efficient way to move the football. Passing is much more efficient. But what you see is like it's dipping down, and it's through week six, it's bad. It's very, very bad through week six. Climbs a little bit in week seven through nine. Even week 10 was not that great, which is when we've started talking about the trend changing. From week 11 on, that was the Rams game, by the way. It's been pretty good other than that Colts game last week, which was terrible. But the game against the Rams, that 0.356, folks, I'll bring you back to this chart in a second. But I'll bring you up to another chart for me. Okay, here it is. That rushing game against the Rams was the sixth most efficient rushing game the Seahawks have had since 2015. That was a surprise to me. 171 yards. I think a lot of that went unnoticed. And one of the other things I found in looking at this that was really cool, and this I think did not get a lot of engagement on online, but I think this is a really meaningful number. The stuff rate. We've talked about the stuff rate on this show, right? When you're running the ball, everyone focused on explosives. That's important, and yards per carry and EPA and success. All those things are very important. But stuff rate is a really big deal, because if you're getting stuffed is, again, if you get 0 yards or negative yards on a rush, that's a stuffed run. And so stuffed rate is the percentage of runs that you have that are negative or 0 yards, right? You want to have a low stuff rate on offense. Well, the first few weeks of the season, the Seahawks had a very high stuff rate in the 20% plus. Their lowest stuff rate of the year on offense was the first game against the Rams, 5.7%. Their second lowest stuff rate on offense of the year was the next game against the Rams, this past Thursday, 8%. So there's a couple of things happening here that are really important to pay attention to for the future, which is the Seahawks offense has had its most efficient run games against the Seahawks' biggest rival, the Rams. And oh, by the way, the Rams are a pretty damn good run defense. They came into that game, let me just double check my numbers, but the Rams came into that game against the Seahawks as the fourth ranked run defense by DVOA. So the fact is Seahawks are explosive. Ken Walker's now torched them twice. They're not getting negative runs. And they are being efficient with the runs that they're getting. The other number here to pay attention to is the Seahawks rushing defense. And this is also against the Rams. The Rams' worst stuffed rate. This is when they're on offense. This is a team that came into this game with the number one ranked DVOA rushing offense in the NFL. First game against the Seahawks, 31.8% stuffed rate. That was their worst of the year. Then on Thursday, 17.9% stuff rate. That was the fourth worst for the Rams all season. That's not all. I'm going to keep going because there's some things here that really got my attention. This is a look. let me first show you this awesome chart from the stat account, which shows all of the success rates of offenses versus defenses. So basically what this is net success rate. Did your success rate on offense eclipse the success rate you gave up to your opponent on defense? So you want this always to be above the line. And if we zoom in on the Seahawks, which is right here, you could see the Seahawks have been above the line in success rate in every game other than very narrowly to the 49ers. All right. Even the Rams games, every game they've been very positive, or they've been a positive net success rate. But what stood out to me is look at the Rams. They've been solidly positive in net success rate in every game this season, except for two. Guess which two those were? The Seahawks, both times. So even though it felt like the Rams were taking belt to ass for a lot of that game, the Seahawks had a higher success rate than the Rams over the course of that game. That was surprising to me. I think it's also pretty damn meaningful that the team that we all keep talking about, or a lot of us keep talking about as probably the best team, or maybe the best team, or deserves to be considered the best team, the Seahawks, efficiency wise, have beaten them twice, and they beat them worse the first time. They still beat them this time. All right. So that was another number that for me got my attention, for sure. Now, the other thing that I wanted to share here, since we're on run defense and running in general and success rate, this was a look at the Seahawks had just gone through this gauntlet of facing a bunch of really good rushing offenses. The Falcons with Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier, seventh in DVOA. The Colts second, the Rams first. In those three games, the Seahawks gave up no runs of 12 yards or more. That is crazy. Like, that is give up essentially zero explosive runs, depending on your definition of explosive, to those three teams. That's a pretty big deal. Now, the Panthers have the 13th ranked DVOA rush offense. The 49ers have the 19th. So it gets, quote, a little easier, but I wouldn't rest on any laurels. The point is the Seahawks run defense can hang with anybody. So let's get back to this look here about where we were talking about before, the trends in the run game. So that was the EPA. Again, the green line is the run line. And if you guys are like, your eyes are glossing over, I get it. I love this stuff. This stuff is part of, like, I loved pulling up these numbers. I loved coding this stuff. I loved looking at it and seeing, you know, this is part of what I did at my job too. I loved analytics. I love all that stuff. So, I'll just keep going, but if this is not for you, I totally get it. So the rushing success rate, if you look at that, you kind of squint from week 3 to week 15. Well, this should be all the way up to week 16, but that's a trend line. That's a trend line going up pretty linearly. Now, there's some dips for sure, but the overall trend there, from being, you know, in the threes and the twos, the 28%, 34% success rate, to being more often than not 41, 44, 42, 40, you know, and then all the way up to a 46% success rate on the ground against the Rams this game. It's a big deal. So again, I think that there's some positive trends happening there. There's also we should, since we're here, call attention to less positive trends in the pass line. If you look at the blue line, there are some pretty high peaks up through week eight. Those peaks have disappeared since then. So, yeah, just something to, you know, I think the Seahawks have become a more conservative team. This actually looks at run plays versus pass plays. Interestingly, the blues are the pass plays. You can kind of roughly see like how often it was more run plays than pass plays. They've actually percentage wise become a heavier passing team of late. Now, some of that is these last two games where they were trailing, and that probably changes the game script a little bit. But yeah, it's just, it's something to watch. If you're curious, this is a look at the defensive stuff, and the defense has essentially just been nails most of the season. The pass, you know, EPA and success rate for the Rams game, not good, but otherwise everything's pretty much below the line negative stuff other than the Tampa game earlier in the season. So that was a piece there. All right. So there's a couple other things I wanted to dive into. One of them is how the Seahawks are doing in the red zone. And I'm going to show you a couple things here to bring this to life a little bit. This is my new reports page that I'm working on. The red zone has been an issue. I want to pull open the latest data on this. I told you about this last week, that the Seahawks had actually ranked number one in the NFL in percentage of their drives that were resulting in points heading into the game against the Rams. They were tied with the Rams. All right. And actually, this was from week 10 on. This is like, you know, wondering what's going on with the Seahawks, right? So if we go, let me get from week 10 on again. Actually, week 12, I think it was after the Rams game was the one that we were doing. So I'm going to do week 12 on to make sure we're apples to apples with the new data from the game this week. So the Seahawks have dropped down to sixth over that period of time. But still, you know, an issue is that they're scoring too many field goals and not enough touchdowns. Part of the reason they won this game against the Rams is because they did score touchdowns instead of field goals in a lot of situations. Well, if you look at this cumulative season red zone performance, this is kind of a look at breaking down red zone into not just one number, but different parts of the red zone. How is the team performing at different levels? So high red zone, 11 to 20 yards, mid red zone, 6 to 10 yards, and then goal line, 1 to 5 yards. And here's just a quick report, like visual way to look at it, right? So over the course of the season, the Seahawks have been pretty good in the high red zone. 0.102 positive EPA. 39.7% success rate's not great. 11.5% TD rate. That's not terrible, right? Now, goal line, they've also been pretty darn good. Over a 52% success rate, 42% touchdown rate, positive EPA. Mid red zone has not been great. 6 to 10 yard line, negative EPA. A little bit higher success rate, but a 16% touchdown rate. All right. So just keep this in mind for a second. Full season report in the red zone, high red zone, pretty good. Mid red zone, weak spot, goal line, pretty good. So let's go and look at how it's been trending of late. And I think I've got a chart already ready that I can share with you guys on this. So look at what's gone on here. This is the high red zone. Remember, over the course of the season, it had been pretty good for them. And you can see up through week 9, all positive EPA. Then from week 10 on, there's been some struggle. Like, there's been some games where it's been very good. But week 10, week 11, week 15, week 16, all negative EPA in the high red zone, 11 to 20 yard line. And part of the reason this was a question mark for me that I was looking at was that I've noticed that when the Seahawks get to the high red zone, they seem to run the ball a lot. And in fact, trying to think, is there an easy, quick way for me to figure out percentage of plays that are runs? I think I can do this quickly. Let's try it. My hypothesis here is that the Seahawks are getting to the red zone, and then for whatever reason, they're getting a little stubborn about the fact that when they're in the high red zone, they need to run the ball. And I think that that's not working well for them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at finding starting field position. Okay. This is at the opponent's 10 to 20 yard line. All right. And we are going to say play type. Well, it doesn't really matter. Play type, let's make it a play from scrimmage so it's not extra points and field goals and stuff like that. And let's see over the course of, they're going to do the full season to start with. I'm going to see whether the Seahawks have a different trend, propensity for what they do in this situation. So the Seahawks offense on the year have 48 rushes and 42 passes in that situation. And I want to pull that into a spreadsheet real quick. I told you I'm going to go all over the place in this one because this is a working session, folks. We're working together on this. I want to do a quick percentage of how often they are rushing in that compared to other teams. And then we're going to see how their effectiveness is at rushing in the high red zone. So we're going to do, I'm not going to go deep here because this is probably a project I should do off air, but I am just curious and it won't take too long to at least get some initial numbers. So if we do, that's wrong. If we do this, good. Okay. So I'm going to do this for all teams in the NFL. We're going to find out which teams have the highest rush percentage in the high red zone over the course of the season. All right. So I am right in one regard. The Seahawks at 53.3% have the second highest rush rate, running the ball rate in the high red zone over the course of the season. The only team that has a higher running rate is the Philadelphia Eagles at 57%. Right behind them, the Baltimore Ravens, where Mike McDonald cut his teeth. To give you an idea, like the Rams, who have become a very good red zone team, they run the ball 40% of the time in the high red zone. There's not a right or a wrong, but there's just different styles there. Now, the next thing I want to look at is how is the effectiveness of the running game in that high red zone. So now I'm going to limit it to just look at running plays, and we're going to see how the Seahawks do in terms of rushing plays. In fact, I think I can ask my little app here. Where do the Seahawks rank in rushing success rate between the opponent's 11 and 20 yard line? All right, we'll see if that comes back, but I'm going to look at what I can get from Stathead first. So the Seahawks, we're looking at all their runs and their average yards gained on those running plays. 3.8 yards. That is middle of the pack in that regard. Based off of my data from my little chart, or my little app that I've built. Let's see. I'll share this with you guys. This is the data that I've got. So the Seahawks ranked 22nd in the NFL. Now, that's not right, the rushing attempts. So I'm going to get that out of there. But that does not seem right. That must be over many seasons. So ignore that. I got a during the 2025 season. I'll narrow it down. Okay. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at the fact that I think the Seahawks are stalling in the red zone, the high red zone in particular, of late. I think they are running the ball more often. I think it's not working very well. A contrast with the fact that they've been running the ball more effectively over the course of the recent seasons. So, or the recent part of the season. So you can understand why. And Mike McDonald has specifically said teams need to run the ball well in the red zone to perform well. I think that certainly helps, but I'm not as convinced of that working so well for the Seahawks. All right, so there are some other pieces here. And this is why I wanted to look at that, because there isn't as much of a change for the mid red zone and the low red zone. They're still doing pretty well there. The other thing that I've been looking at is third downs and just downs in general. And so I haven't really gone through this one in much detail. But I'll probably do this separately because I want to make sure I have a chance to look at it and analyze it a little bit more. But I think that the Seahawks have been running the ball better and having a little bit more success on first downs of late. I think there's actually a pretty quick way for me to figure that out. So if I go to Ben Baldwin's page, and I look at first down. Let's do first down. Let's do whatever. And we're going to do first the full season. And we're going to look at, I'll share this with you guys so you can see what I'm seeing. If you do the first, it's regenerating. Okay. So this is just looking at first down for the whole year. And you can see the Seahawks, up here in the upper right. The Rams, best first down team in the NFL for the full season, right? Seahawks rank fifth in the NFL in first down rate. And rushing success rate, though, if you look at the Seahawks, they're 18th over the full season. But this is what I want to do. Let's limit this now to week 10 on. And this is just first down. We've looked at overall rushing success rate and how it's improved. But the Seahawks are up to 11th in rushing success rate over that period of time. So I think the fact of the matter is that they're doing a better job running on early downs than they were earlier. But they are not doing well in the red zone when they're deciding to try to run the ball. The other thing, obviously, that's standing in their way of getting to where they want to go is first, sorry, just jumping all around here. So red zone, high red zone is an issue. Running the ball effectively is an issue. It's been something that they've improved at, but I think it is a really, really key part. The reason I'm spending all this time on rushing offense is because if the Seahawks can be a top 10 rushing offense, I think everything else gets easier. Everything else gets easier. And part of that is there's going to be fewer pass attempts, fewer chances for turnovers, more chances to control time of possession, more time for the defense to rest, more time for less chances, less possession for the other team to have drives against the Seahawks. I think it just makes a huge difference in a lot of different ways. But the other real obstacle for the Seahawks and where they want to go is turnovers. And as it stands, the Seahawks rank, they rank 31st in turnovers, like second to worst. They've been kind of stuck there for a while. They're almost certainly going to end the season with a negative turnover differential, which is really rare to be this good with that bad of a turnover situation. It's not unheard of. There's Super Bowl teams that have done it recently and won the Super Bowl, but that's a huge issue. And where things stand with just looking at where they are turnover wise, this is a huge step back. This was a huge step back. They had gone since the Rams game. They had two games where they had no turnovers, one game where they had one turnover. That was the Atlanta game. And then the Minnesota game, they had two. Having three in this was a really big step back. Of those turnovers, the majority of them are interceptions, right? And if you look at the interceptions that Sam Darnold threw in this game against the Rams, I'm going to show you one of them, but I'm not going to be able to play the video, but I am going to do some freeze frame so you guys can see what I'm seeing. The Rams do this thing where, and I'm going to show you from Mike Dugar's account because he has the video up there from this. All right. So, and share this screen. So this is Sam's first interception. All right. And what you're going to see on this play, I'm going to have to go back and forth to not show it playing, but I'm going to show you what Sam sees versus what the defender does to violate rules here. Okay. So here's what Sam sees. All right. This is Sam right here. He is looking up at the top here at, I believe that is JSM, but I'm not positive. And I think this is Cooper Kupp here. So they're both running these slants. If his defender, Cooper Kupp's defender, stays on Cooper Kupp, this whole area here is open. And you're going to get a pass to JSN that's just going to keep going. That's Shahid. Someone's saying that's Shahid. Okay. Rashid Shahid. Thank you. So he's beat his man. He's got inside position. This guy's trailing one of the fastest receivers in the NFL. This is a good read by Sam Darnold. What happens next? Well, that defender does not stay with his man. That defender, Josh Wallace, was looking in the backfield, and you can see his helmet. His eyes are looking that direction. The ball's already in the air. Sam's throwing with anticipation. And again, look at Shahid. He's got his man on his back. Like, if this ball is not intercepted, Rashid Shahid is still running. Okay? And yet, this guy leaves his man to jump that pass. Now, you could say that was well coached. It was a good thought, good instinct. A couple things that I will just bring up there about that play. First is, it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was when I first saw it, in action. I thought it was another Sam Darnold throwing it directly to the defender. That's not what happened. He made a good read to a player who's open. And if anything, there might be a note here for Clint Kubiak that he was scouted well by Chris Shula, or the defenders saw something where his two slant work there is too tightly, like the spacing's not quite right. Because that puts the defender in a position to make that play. The other thing is the Rams are taking risks. They are taking risks. If the Seahawks introduce like some pump action, some pump fake, the Rams are biting on everything. So I would love to see Sam take a hitch and do a hitch and go, you know, see Sam actually give them the idea that the ball is going where they think it's going to go, and then have a double move and have the receivers break out the opposite way. Because at least against the Rams, these guys are eyes in the backfield. They're jumping on the absolute first throw, like the first movement. So I think there's an opportunity there for the Seahawks to really burn them. I'm going to talk to Matt Hasselbeck about this tomorrow, but this was not as bad of an interception as I thought it was. Why does that matter? I think the process for these interceptions are as important as anything else. I think the second interception wasn't great. My read of that is he shouldn't have thrown the ball at all. Like when he was getting hit like that, the player was covered. It wasn't going to turn out well. So I put that on Sam. At the same time, the Seahawks, I believe that was a third down. I can go back and look, but they were in dire straits at that point. It was 30-16 already. They were maybe going to go for it on fourth down, you'd think, but if he had taken the sack, that would have been made it really even harder. Point being that I think there's reason to think that some of these interceptions are correctable. I also think that Sam Darnold went back and threw a ton of great passes after these and did not really put the ball in harm's way the rest of the time. Ultimately, if you're to ask me, like, what do I feel most confident in terms of the Seahawks being able to avoid in terms of these obstacles ahead of them? I don't think they're going to avoid the Rams. I think the Rams they're on a collision course with the Rams to get to the Super Bowl, wherever that ends up. Might be the first game they play in the playoffs. It might be the championship game. Who knows? But I think that's not an obstacle you're going to avoid. I think there's more reasons for optimism about that matchup, given some of the things I just talked to you guys about, how the Seahawks have run against them, how much the Rams have struggled to run, how the Seahawks' success rate has been net positive both games. I think there's reasons to be optimistic there. The red zone situation and the challenges there. There's been some improvement in the red zone. And for example, they were 2-for-3 against the Rams after going 0-for-2 against the Colts and 2-for-4 against the Falcons. They were 1-for-2 against, like, they hadn't been over 50% in the red zone since week 10 against the Commanders. So that's progress. But I still think the high red zone, to me, I think there's some play calling changes they make there. I'm pretty optimistic, since they've been good there all year, that maybe that there's some things that they can correct or self-scout to improve there. Turnovers, I've got the least confidence of that going, getting better. The I think the way that I would feel best, most optimistic about the turnovers improving is if the Seahawks are able to continue running the ball, period. The less dropbacks, the less situations where Sam Darnold is having to deal with that, you know, high volume of passes or passes under pressure, the less chance that he's going to turn the ball over. It's just a math situation. It's not like hard analysis. That's just a reality. The other factor there in terms of turnovers, let's pull this up real quick. I'll look at this on PFF. How many of Sam Darnold's interceptions have come when he was being pressured or blitzed? Let's look at that real quick. So Sam Darnold. Oof. Where is it? Sam Darnold. Okay. Seven of his interceptions have come when he was under pressure. Six have come when he's not under pressure. So, I mean, the majority of them have come under pressure, but not great. Maybe a better indication is turnover-worthy throws. He's had a 5.4% turnover-worthy play rate when under pressure. He's at a 2.7% turnover-worthy play rate when he's not. Why does that matter? Well, the Panthers and the 49ers, at least for the next two games, both potential playoff teams. The 49ers are a playoff team. They've clinched the playoff spot. They're the two lowest pressure rate teams in the NFL. So Sam Darnold should be in a pretty good situation to not be under pressure. And everyone there's be like, oh, yeah, but look at how they played against the 49ers in the first week. Well, the 49ers in the first week had Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, and Clint Kubiak had no idea what his offensive line was going to be like or how Sam Darnold was going to play or any of this other stuff. I don't think the first game has almost any relevance on how the Seahawks offense will perform in the next game against the 49ers. But this does, I think, indicate teams that struggle to rush the passer and teams that struggle to defend the run are not going to be good matchups for the Seahawks. I think those are the teams where the Seahawks offense is going to be able to operate really effectively. If there's a team that is really good rushing the passer, it's not rocket science. That's probably one of the harder matchups for the Seahawks. Now, if you're a good pass rushing team, but you have some coverage deficiencies, the Seahawks can make up for that. They've done that all year. If you're a good pass rush team, but you're a bad run defense team, Seahawks can also now start to show that they're able to make up the ground there as well. So they're starting to find more ways to combat this issue. I don't think all of a sudden Sam Darnold's not going to turn the ball over. I just don't believe that. The difference between Sam Darnold and a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, who is a turnover machine and did go and play in a Super Bowl with 49ers, is Sam Darnold's propensity to make the big throw, a play that a downfield, like Jimmy Garoppolo was not a downfield passer, was not a guy that was known for big plays. He was kind of just a game manager. He was pretty good in the intermediate area, sometimes in the middle of the field, but he didn't have the big play potential that Sam Darnold does. So, yeah, we'll find out. Let me get to some super chats here, as I've been rambling for a long time. We've got Brent Uendo says, do you think the Rams played fourth down aggressively, knowing that they already had a win under their belt? Do you think they'd risk that again in the playoffs? Okay, so you're talking about the Rams on offense. Sorry, my mind was completely in a different place. I don't think it had anything to do with the win being under their belt. I think the fact is they didn't have Davante Adams. I think they felt better about the game script if they were ahead. I think they felt very good about their game plan in the passing and offense in general. I think the run game for them initially was getting pretty good early down success. And then it really eroded from there. So I think that they had a lot of reasons for going for it on fourth down early. And as far as do I think they'd risk that again in the playoffs, I think people make different decisions in the playoffs. I think I think Sean McVay would be a little bit more conservative personally in the playoffs, but we'll see. Jaden Cruz says, can we get McDonald versus McVay prime time every time they match up? Well, the rest of this year, you can guarantee that's going to be the case, because next time they play, it's going to be in the playoffs. Drakovid says, thoughts on DK and LeSean McCoy takes on Sam. Thoughts on DK. I already talked about DK, so I'm not going to go back over that. You can rewind if you want to listen to my DK stuff. LeSean McCoy, I haven't heard his takes on Sam. I'm not sure I give a shit what LeSean McCoy thinks about Sam. I mean, I'm guessing it's negative. Maybe I'm wrong. But I'll give you my take on Sam. You guys can decide if you care about that. I think Sam is... How do I put it? I think Sam is a incredibly talented quarterback who's a really good fit for this team, who has some really significant processing flaws. His decision making about when to run, when to take a sack, when to throw it away, even how to throw it away. The fact that he throws it at people's feet downfield as opposed to throwing it over their heads and out of bounds, I think has led to a couple times where it's bounced off helmets and turned into interceptions. I'd rather he just throw it out of the building, you know? And I think he also plays with a lot of anticipation. That's shown up in training camp, where receivers talked about that they had to get used to him throwing the ball before they were out of their breaks. And that can get you into trouble. It can get you, it can be really, really great where you can make some throws nobody else can make because you're willing to do that. But it also really puts you at risk. I don't know if you can win a Super Bowl with Sam Darnold yet. That's where I'm at. I don't know. I wish I could be definitive about it. He's made enough errors in judgment that were critical and costly that I can't just forget those and pretend that they didn't happen. He's also, I mean, there's a narrative out there about the fact that he's, he doesn't step up in big moments. He's not clutch. And I put this out there the other day as well, just to combat that narrative. It's just not true. Based on the past 2 years, when he's been a starter, he's second in the NFL in game-winning drives. He's third in passer rating in close and late situations. Final 5 minutes of fourth quarter overtime within 8 points. He's fifth in EPA per play in those situations. So this primarily has come from at least locally, Mike Salk has been like, I got to see Sam do it in the clutch. I'm like, that's not it. I don't think that's the issue. I think Sam's actually performed really pretty well in the clutch. Even the times where he didn't all the way bring them back, like the 49ers game, he got them down to the red zone in no time. And then, that was a pretty unfortunate turnover, but it happened. So I don't think it's a clutch thing. My general instinct is Sam Darnold just needs to let it loose. The more he is thinking, the more he's in his own head, the more he's going to make decisions he can't. And I think that the best way to get that version of Sam Darnold and the most positive version of Sam Darnold is for Clint Kubiak to do his job really well. And that means not always passing the ball on third and short. It means, you know, continuing to refine this run game. It means using play action the way you have. I think it means at times getting him out of the pocket, rolling him out, not having him. I think he is less effective directly in the pocket, I think, than when he's on the move. So that's kind of where I see Sam Darnold. I think if somebody says you're too negative, of course you can win a Super Bowl with Sam Darnold, I'd say, okay, like, that's fine. You can believe that. I don't think there's evidence yet to support that. If you're like, Sam Darnold's trash, there's no way you can win a Super Bowl, I'd say, like, okay, I don't think there's evidence to support that either. That's part of the fun, is we're going to get to watch that unfold, and we're watching that unfold over the course of the season. If you really, really, really wanted to just say, okay, what does the evidence really show? Seahawks are the number one team in the NFL by point differential, by record, by DVOA. They're one of the five best teams in the history of the NFL through 16 weeks by DVOA. Sam Darnold's been their quarterback and made a lot of mistakes along the way. That's probably your best evidence that, yeah, they can do whatever the hell they want with Sam Darnold at quarterback. So that's kind of where I land on this. I'm not dreading watching the next game with Sam Darnold. I'm not dreading watching the playoffs with them. I'm eager to see this team play every game and every play, because I think they're a team deserving of that kind of attention and optimism. I think that's how good they are. All right, folks, that will do it for this episode. I think I got all the super chats in. Just double checking. If you haven't liked and subscribed, please do. Oh, and my gosh, I can't believe I forgot this. This is important. If you have not gone to simplyseattle.com, it's only a couple more days till the 24th. That not only will you get 15% off getting your favorite Seahawks gear, whatever, it's not too late to get Christmas presents or whatever else for you or for someone else, but you get 15% off using code HawkBlogger15. 5% of whatever you purchase will also go, the purchase price will go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient Family Assistance Fund. That provides vital help with transportation, temporary lodging for patients fighting for their lives. Also, If you buy one of the Simply Seattle Simply Good hoodies, they're $25. You get another $5 will be donated to the Fred Hutch charity. So it's a really good deal for you and for other people. HawkBlogger15 is the code. Make sure you take advantage of it. Then go over to Sleeper, grab the Sleeper app. You can get $20 without even making a deposit. And if you use promo code Hawks, you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right, now we are officially done with this Monday episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Let's root against the 49ers tonight. Let's hope Philip Rivers has that Hollywood ending that everyone wanted against the Seahawks, but he does against San Francisco. That would be great. Until then, have a great rest of your day.